Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And today we're here with Kenneth Adoy, who is an international educator with a wide range of experience in elementary education. We'll be discussing their journey and experiences in education. Kenneth, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I am great, and thank you for having me.
We are most certainly welcome. I am very excited for you to be here. As your orientation buddy for here at Chadwick, I am very excited I get to have you as a guest, because I think we've been chatting back and forth for almost a year now.
Almost a year, yeah.
It's been a crazy ride, hasn't it? From going from emails to seeing us in person. And I'm so glad to be your colleague here in grade three at Chadwick. So, Kenneth, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Kenneth Adoy and your story as an educator?
Who is Kenneth Adoy? Kenneth Adoy. Wow. So I've been in education now for 19 years, I think, which is crazy to me to say that out loud. I started teaching in California. With first graders, which actually wasn't my first choice. And I kind of fell into that and I loved it. And actually didn't see myself doing anything else other than teaching first grade in California for a long time. And then I just kind of got this bug that I wanted to do some traveling and move over to London specifically. I wanted to live in London and work in London and be just a Londoner. And I made that happen. I made some moves to make that happen. And I think I was staying in London for like 2 or 3 weeks before I ended up getting a job in Germany. And that started me on my international school teaching career. And now I'm here in Korea, Chadwick.
What a crazy ride that must have been. Because I know coming from Kansas, going overseas, that was a culture shock. But what did you see having taught in the, like, teaching in the public sector versus teaching internationally? What were some challenges or things that you really took you by surprise?
So I think one of the biggest things, like, I remember the first time I went back home and I was talking to a parent of former students, and they're like, you know, what's the biggest difference now that you've moved over? And I was like, it's the class sizes. So when I was teaching in California, I was teaching upwards of 30 kids in my class. And in my first international school, I think they really tried to cap things at 18 kids, which for me was like, what? Like, this is unheard of. This is crazy. Well, of course I can teach 18 kids. This is nothing. We're going to have so much fun. Yeah. 18 kids and a teaching assistant. And it was like, this is insane. I loved it. So I think one of the biggest things was just resources. Mm-hmm. And the resources available, right? Because that's what that came down to, is that there were more resources available coming internationally. And it was just like, there's so many other things that we could do. With that also came some challenges. Like, the first school I went to was also a PYP school. I was unfamiliar with PYP at the time. So it was kind of learning that idea and learning those, just learning a new system for teaching. Mm-hmm. Of course, teaching 18 versus teaching 30 is already a new system for teaching.
Yeah.
And just really, it was a chance for me to grow not only as an educator, but just as a person. So I think those were like biggest challenges for me were just like that shift in attitude and shift in, curricular focus, but also just like been challenging myself. Like you said, you came from Kansas. I came from California and my first school was in Germany, and like going from the US to Germany and going from my school to this new international school, and everything about that move was this, and with the London in between, was just sort of like, whoa, this is such a different place from where I thought I would be from this kid who grew up in the Valley of California.
Oh, when I talk to my family, it is a constant reminder of how far I have grown as a human being. Of just like what you said about growing up as a kid in the Valley. Like, I remember growing up in the fields of Kansas, cleaning bricks for my grandfather as a kid. Right. And I just, it just blows my mind what international career has done for me, as what you're talking about. It's just mind blowing.
It's mind blowing. It's, and the perspective, like, I think that's the biggest thing that, like, I'm so proud to talk to people about, is like just how it changes your perspective. I think we, you know, we all know, like, just leaving your home regardless as if you stay in the same country, leaving your home adds a different perspective, leaving your state, leaving, you know, traveling outside the country on a holiday, that all of those things change your perspective. But to have lived and to work and to really kind of immerse yourself in these different cultures and kind of see the world from all of these different eyes, it's just, it's been amazing.
No, absolutely. And Kenneth, like when you see the staggering percentage of how many people in the States, like when I first got my passport, I remember the guy that I got it or filled out the application. He's like, I don't get very many of these. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, I don't think a lot of people have a passport. And then when I started looking into how many people actually don't leave their tri-state area or leave the neighboring state, it was very eye-opening, because here I am, you know, my first country I ever visited was Kuwait. That was just crazy for me. And I just know how amazing is these opportunities that we have and how lucky we are to get these different perspectives of international, different perspectives, different cultures. And it's just amazing.
Sure. Yeah. Like just like, I've never looked into it. That's interesting too. Actually, I should look into it, but just talking to people. And I, you know, unfortunately, more fortunately, I don't go back to my hometown very often, but I know there are people that I went to school with that have never left my hometown.
Yeah.
I mean, other than like, oh, I, you know, they're going around maybe to a neighboring city, maybe they went to the lake or something, but they're not, they haven't actually left my hometown.
Yeah.
And that to me was always scary, but it's even scarier now, like, how, like, because you're limiting yourself so much by not stepping up.
Yeah. And, you know, taking that step is a very scary, absolutely scary thing. And, you know, how do you, what advice do you have for people who are wanting to do the international career, but it's just so uncertain, because it is a massive step and it is a very scary step to put yourself out there in a different culture, in a different system, when you've never experienced anything like that? You know, for someone who's done so many positions, have done so many stations and around Europe and now Asia, what advice do you give to people who are just trying to get out in the international?
Just trying to do it. You know, as cliche as it is, it's the, I think you just have to do it. You have to, I mean, there's so many reasons why you could say no. So many reasons. There's so many reasons, and there's always going to be those reasons why it's not a good time. It's, there's always something. It's like, you know, when people talk about having kids, right? It's never the right time to have kids.
Yeah.
It's never the right time to like pack up your life and move across anywhere, to leave the country, to go anywhere. And I think if you have that in mind, just do it. If it's in your head, if it's in your mind, do it, because and make it happen for yourself. I think that's my advice. Make it happen for yourself. I didn't think about teaching internationally. You know, I mentioned I wanted to go to London. My thought was I want to live in London. It wasn't about I want to work at an international school in London. It was I want to live in London. I think London's cool. I had gone on a trip to, a friend of mine had done her grad school in Ireland. And so the idea was to go to England, and we were meeting up in England. Right. And that was how I even left the country for the first time, was to meet up with her. So it wasn't about teaching at that point. It was just like, oh, this is really cool. I want to go spend a year and do that. And like I said, now we're 19 years later, and 14 years abroad. So 19 until about 14 years abroad. And like, and you just have to do it. Make it happen for yourself. And it's hard, but when it's something that you commit to and something that you work for, it just happens. The doors open, the path becomes clear, and you make it happen. And you reach out to people that have done it, like ask for help, ask for advice.
I always say, you know, I do a lot of talks with my old alma mater, University of Kansas, about starting out as an international educator. And they always ask, what do you do? How do you do it? And I was like, you just put yourself out there. You know, don't go in with, I want this specific school, or I want this specific city, or I want this specific continent. Just go out, apply for everything, put all the cards on the table, and just see what it is. Because at the end of the day, it's only a year or two. It's going to be an amazing experience, because you're going to learn a lot, and it's going to give you a new perspective. You know, I have friends who went to Kuwait with the idea, I'm going to do it for 1 or 2 years. They've been there for 20. I have friends who went to China, have said, I'm going to do this for a year. They've been there for 15, 17 years. And it's just, once you get there and you get into the flow of things, life does happen, and it's just a lot of fun. And it's been a really great experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's been the best learning experience for me, as I can attest for you as well. Like, I've learned so much being abroad that I don't think I ever would have learned in the wheat fields of Kansas.
Totally. Like it's a completely different life. It's like, I said that before, there's no way I would have learned the things that I've learned now by being abroad that I would have if I had just stayed. And that's not to say that life would not be good or it would be horrible. It's just a different path. And I'm so thankful and so glad that I chose to take that step.
Yeah.
Right. Take the step.
Absolutely. So having taught again in the public sector, now teaching in the international sector for a while, what has changed your mind about education? Has there anything been really a light bulb moment for you that was like, you know what, this is a really good idea that I'm going to share with my other friends, or I'm going to share with friends back at home?
Yeah. And especially in this particular job, so making this change to come to Korea, to come to Chadwick, one of the things I talked about in my interview is, I think we've said a lot, we've used this word perspective, but my teaching and my learning about myself has really transformed in terms of elementary education. Like, there's always trends. There's always the up and down. There's always, you know, do you teach this curriculum or this curriculum or this curriculum? And what I've learned about myself is I'm really interested in kind of the social emotional aspect and educating children to be good people. And good, you know, is a value statement, but like, it's not so much to me about the academics. Of course, I care about the academics and I want my kids to be academically successful. But really, when a kid leaves my classroom, I want to know that they are a compassionate person, that they can show empathy, that they understand that, you know, even though we all may be different, we are more alike than we are different, and that we can respect each other's differences. Like, are they good people? And I think that's what I take away from all of that. And this pandemic has really kind of shown that too. Like, my last school, we were really talking about test scores, which, you know, that's education. We talk about test scores, but how our test scores didn't really fall the way that we thought they would with the kids being offline and things like that, because we did kind of switch to making sure that kids were just okay. Like, when we were doing our online sessions, of course we focused on, you know, the learning, but it was really about like, how are you doing? Let's chat. Yeah. Let's talk to each other. Let them give you the space so that we're not going to do anything academic. I just want you to socialize with each other, and really thinking about that. And the kids didn't fall as far behind as we expected them to. And so that's what's changed for me. That's the advice I give to people, is the education. The kids will learn. The kids will learn. The kids will get it. What we have to focus on teaching is, I don't like to say values, but it is these values. It's, are you being a good person? Are you going to contribute to society? How are you being a good citizen of wherever you are?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the important part.
No, I completely agree with you. One of my colleagues, when I used to do summer camp for, again, the University of Kansas, one of my colleagues, Charles, always told all our campers, he's like, our number one rule here, or our motto, is being a good citizen. And I've taken that into my own classroom with, as like, you know, I'm not here to help you be Beethoven or be Mozart. I'm here to help you explore, help express yourself using music as a mode of learning. And I was like, but at the end of the day, I want you leaving my classroom loving music and loving people, and making sure that you're being a good person. And the fact that, you know, making good people is an amazing motto that I think we sometimes lose sight of, because we are focused on test scores. We are focused on those products. And I think sometimes we get lost in all this shuffle and hoopla about, you know, where is this process? Why is our why? You know,
right.
Simon Sinek always talks about the why of what we do, and our why is making good people. And I always...
Right. I love that. Our why is to make good people.
Yeah. And I just think we have to come back to that. And if we're already there, we have to keep reminding ourselves, because I know I am very guilty of it, losing track of that, getting caught in the shuffle of things and losing that vision of such. So, you know, what is your vision? What is your vision for the next 10, 15 years for Kenneth Adoy?
Oh, from me personally, or for me, or for education?
Either one, or either one, whatever you want to share.
Oh, what is my vision? I think my vision for me is to keep growing. Mm-hmm. Is to keep growing, wherever that may be. I've never set out, as I said, I didn't set out to be an international school teacher. So I never set out to say, as you mentioned, I want to be here, I want to do this. Other than I want to be a good person, mm-hmm. and I want to keep growing, I want to keep learning. That's the most positive thing that one can do, is to, and then to share that positivity, to share that learning, mm-hmm. Which is why I'm an educator. It's to share what I know with other people and hopefully get them excited.
Yeah.
So I want to keep doing that. And how, whatever that looks like, I think it doesn't necessarily need to always be, me teaching. I teach third grade now. So me teaching third grade is not necessarily always going to be the path that I'm going to be on. But as long as I can keep helping people and sharing what I know and hopefully making those connections, that's what I want to be doing in the next 10 years and beyond. And if I think about education, I think, as I said too, like there's always a shift, but if we can, we have administrators and we have teachers and educators and staff that do keep in mind that it is a balance, but ultimately we're trying to make good people that mm-hmm. are kind and respectful of others in the world, especially with everything going on. If we can just get kids to take that on, and I think it's a top-down kind of thing is what needs to happen, I guess, educationally. I think we do a fantastic job in elementary schools. I'm going to big up my elementary school teachers there. and it starts to get lost when we get into the upper grades, because the shift does become on the product.
Yeah.
And less on the person. And I understand why that is. But I think until we can really make that shift top down, universities, and what are the entrance requirements? What are we really looking at? What are we emphasizing? What are we valuing? That's what needs to change, I think. And be looking at the whole person.
Yeah.
And as much as I can only speak for the U.S. university system way back when I was a university student, but until we start really focusing on the whole person and not just, oh, you did 17 extracurricular activities, look at how well-rounded you are. That's what needs to shift, I think, is recognizing the balance, certainly not losing the academics, but recognizing and valuing the balance.
Yeah. Or, you scored a 30 on your ACT or
ACT, right?
Something on your SAT or no, I totally understand that. And I do agree. And I think there needs to be a balance. And if there's anything that this pandemic has taught us, is balance is how we're going to get through it. You know, this pandemic has really made the world such a small place because of social media and being able to connect with others so quickly and such on a rapid level that when this pandemic happened, and I've talked about it on this podcast already several times, the amount of people gathering on Twitter to share resources was absolutely inspiring. And about how do we get our kids to through this? No questions was asked. How do we meet expectations, or how do we meet this arrow standard? But it was, how do we get our kids through this? How do we show them that they belong? How do we make sure that they know that they're being seen? And
right. How do we maintain connection? How do we know? How can we make sure that kids stay connected to each other and mm-hmm. and to other people?
And it was really inspiring. And I do hope that is something that we don't lose, because I think there are a lot of things that we've learned that I do hope stay as the connection part, as belonging part, as, I've seen a lot of classes connecting with other classes around the world on a much bigger scale. And I hope that's something that continues to stay, because again, well, like you said, we're here to make good people, and we're also here to show that we are more similar than we are different.
Different. Exactly. Yeah. So I agree.
Yeah. So it's just really great, a great feeling to be where we are right now. So yeah. Kenneth, yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just agreeing. I think it's a good, as you already said, I hope that it continues. Like, we're in this place where there was a lot that we learned and are learning. It's not like this pandemic is over. There's a lot that we're learning and a lot that we're adjusting. So what happens when we come out on the other side? Hopefully we're not just going back to what we were doing.
Yeah. Is there something that you've learned during this pandemic that you're going to keep continuing post-pandemic?
Yeah, I think that aspect of really, you know, like of connecting socially. And I think I tried to do that anyway, but recognizing the importance of that, of taking the time, you know, if I think about a typical beginning of a school year in an elementary school, at least in upper elementary and in a way lower elementary too, but not early years, is that you spend a couple of weeks, you know, really connecting, getting to know each other, and then you go into your academics, right? It's like this intentional, oh, we're going to spend these first few weeks getting to know the kids and kids getting to know each other, but then we're going to go into our program.
Yeah.
And I think it's really carrying that note. We're going to spend a whole year getting to know each other and connecting with each other, not just 2 weeks and go into the program.
And absolutely,
we're going to keep the program there too, and the curricular side, but it's an all year thing. It's not these first 2 weeks and then we forget about that and move on.
No. And as someone that teaches your class, little shout out to Kenneth Adoy, but your kids do feel very like they belong. They do feel like their voice is heard. And it is a really great thing as a specialist to get those kids that come in being like, I want to learn this. This is why. And this is how I want to learn it, because they know that their voice is going to be understood and going to be heard. And then they can carry that through other classes. And that's just a really powerful way for them to empower their own learning, because at the end of the day, it's their learning.
It's their learning.
Yeah. And we've got to honor that, because we are just facilitators of learning. You know, I do not know everything about music. I am not the best musician, but what I'm going to do is do my best to help you improve in a way that works for you. And that's really helpful when you have homeroom teachers like yourself that are constantly empowering and constantly showing that they belong and working really hard in showing those skills. That
for sure. I like connection. It's we are all working together, right? All of we're a team, including the students. But you know, when you have everyone on the same page, when like you as a specialist, me as a homeroom teacher, when we're all on that same page, I mean, that's when, you know, pardon the expression, but that's when the magic happens. Right? that's when the kids really feel, I want my kids to feel great about coming to school every day.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like that's, at the end of the day, I want the kids to feel like, yeah, I'm really super excited to come to school today because I know it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be fun.
So Kenneth, we ask all guests here on the Recess Studio the same question of, what do you remember from recess growing up?
Recess was so much fun.
Right?
I think one of my favorite memories of recess was playing tetherball. You know, ooh, I don't know out there who's going to know what, how many people will know what tetherball is. But tetherball was my jam back in, at recess. Tetherball and Foursquare.
And Foursquare.
Just getting to meet with my friends, like the friends that I had in different classes that weren't in the same class that I was. And just that was the time where you could just hang out and talk and play. And it was just, it was fun. I loved just playing those games with my friends and having fun and knowing that was going to happen. Like that was also part of the excitement of the day. But coming to school and enjoying school is that knowing that I had that recess time to play with my friends.
Absolutely.
But certainly, tetherball. Tetherball was good. That was a good time.
And that ability to reconnect with your friends on a very unstructured environment.
Unstructured, yeah.
So thank you, Kenneth, for joining this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us in your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and have a great day of learning, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our Recess Duty.